Mark, if you could talk to us a little bit about, you know, obviously the categorization was changed retroactively. What goes into that as far as research, as the determinations that are made after the fact?
Well, they generally assign one of the PhDs down there, one of the hurricane specialists, to lead the effort to do an official reanalysis of these tropical systems after landfall. And it usually takes several months. So the timing of this report is nothing that very unusual. So what they'll do is they'll look at all sorts of data from aircraft measurements, from surface observations, satellite estimates, radar, wind speed estimates, and all of that, run through calculations and compare it all against one another to try to get the best estimate from multiple sources of what the winds actually were. And this is something that's very difficult to do in real time. So the increase was relatively minor, from 135 knots to 140 knots, or 160 miles an hour. That's typically they'll make adjustments somewhere within 10% up or down. So the size of the adjustment was small, but it was enough to tick it upward into the next category on the Saffir-Simpson hurricane wind scale.
And I understand it was right, even real time, as you said, it was right on the cusp.
It was.
Yeah. So I mean, does on the ground damage get factored into that as well, on top of data?
They definitely had plenty of damage photos to look at. We collected over 1,700 damage point photos just here in the local office alone. So they had plenty to look at, but no. The answer to your question is no. This was based on a pure wind analysis. The real-time estimate at landfall on the official advisory was 155 miles an hour. So now they're saying 160. So it's the borderline for Cat 5 is 157. So we were right there anyway. And the difference in damage you'd get from a high-end Cat 4 versus low-end Cat 5 is minimal.
I understand this is one of a very small group of Category 5s that have impacted various places.
Yes.
In the U.S.
That is correct. This is only the fourth one, fourth Category 5 hurricane to make a U.S. landfall. There's the Florida Keys hurricane in 1935, Hurricane Camille in 1969, came up into Mississippi, Hurricane Andrew, which was down in South Florida in 1992, and now Michael here in the Panhandle.
And, you know, one of the particularly unsavory characteristics of Hurricane Michael was how fast it developed. Relative to some of those other hurricanes, and I know you're going back years and decades for some of them, was it kind of an outlier in that way?
It's really going to be hard for me to say, because I don't have at my fingertips, you know, the evolution of like the 1935 storm, for example, or even Camille. But I do know that some hurricanes like Florence, which was another big headline hurricane last year, that one was out there for 10 days before it finally made it to North Carolina. So, but you better believe the short life cycle of Michael made it a lot more of a challenge. In terms of, and coming into it off of a long holiday weekend, it was Columbus Day weekend, so just getting everybody focused and getting everybody's attention, and the speed with which it developed, the rapidity with which it strengthened, is atypical. That's not usual. It was in rapid intensification for almost its entire life cycle.
I know you've got warm water in the Gulf and things like that. Are there theories as to what contributed to that?
No. I think there's opportunities for more research. I do know that in real time, the hurricane season forecasters were kind of marveling over the fact that it continued to not only intensify, but rapidly so, in spite of the fact that there were certain factors that would normally work against that, called wind shear. You know, strong winds aloft up near the jet stream usually tear hurricanes apart, or at least limit their strengthening. But Michael was under the influence of shear, but intensified anyway, right up through landfall. Had the coast been 50 miles further to the north, it would have been that much stronger at landfall.
So when these things get, you know, retroactively changed, which you said isn't terribly uncommon,
right?
What's sort of the impact on that on the research side? Does it, and I lack the scientific knowledge to get specific with my question, but, you know, what does it kind of do on your end now that this hurricane is historic?
It was already historic, so it's not going to have a huge practical influence or change on anything. The storm was already historic. It was the first time there had ever been anything over Cat 3 at landfall. So a high-end Cat 4 was already historic. It was unprecedented. Now that it's a Cat 5, it's just even that much more so. But no, I think that, that the areas for focus are on improving our forecast of intensification, the intensity of storms. Very, very good at track forecasting now. Where is it going to go? That they got that down pat, and air, track errors get less and less every year. But it's these rapidly intensifying systems that we're just not there yet. So there more research needs to be put into that. Then the other side of the equation is you could have a perfect forecast, but if people don't take heed, then you're going to have problems. And there are all sorts of reasons that go into why people choose not to evacuate. The biggest one is that they use their prior experience. Well, guess what? No one had ever experienced a hurricane like this in this part of the country. So that was going to fail people. They was like, oh, we survived Opal back in 95. So we're going to be able to handle this. Now that gets people in trouble. So our challenge as an agency is to try to get folks to personalize and internalize the threat so that they will take action to protect themselves and their family.
Mark, thank you so much for talking to me. Really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.